What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Yesterday, y'all, many of us watched in horror as the video was played on repeat of 37-year-old mother, wife, legal observer, ally, resistor. Watched a video of her being murdered, shot in the head by an ICE agent who then just literally walked away. Some of us also saw the video of her wife who was covered in blood in the snow, sitting down with her dog. We watched community members respond to that murder and be attacked by ICE. One brother was maced in the face. And the point that I was going to make with my guest in the room, but I'm gonna go ahead and continue because this is live radio and we got to do what we got to do. Is that while tragic, while horrific and awful and tragic, Renee Nicole Good's murder is not the first by ICE since the federal agency was unleashed in our communities. On New Year's Eve, Keith Porter, a black man, was murdered by an off-duty ICE agent who went inside of his home and got suited and booted, decided to put himself back on duty and shot that black man who was a father of two outside of his home in Northridge, Southern California, Los Angeles. In September, ICE agents in Chicago shot Severio Villegas Gonzalez, a Mexican-born father and cook, in the neck at close range as he allegedly fled a migrant abduction operation. He died too. Immigration authorities are rounding up dozens of farm workers July 10th at Glass House Farms in Southern California when Jaime Alanis fell from the roof of a greenhouse and broke his neck. The 57-year-old laborer from Mexico died at a hospital 2 days later. A man running away from immigration authorities outside a Home Depot store in Southern California died after being hit by an SUV while he tried to cross a freeway on August 14th. The man killed was later identified as 52-year-old Roberto Carlos Montoya Valdez of Guatemala. A pickup truck fatally struck Josue Castro Rivera on a highway in Norfolk, Virginia, as he tried to escape immigration authorities during a traffic stop on October 23rd. Non-fatal shootings by ICE agents have also disfigured American citizens and residents and warped their lives. Marimar Martinez, a 30-year-old citizen in Chicago, allegedly tailed DHS agents in her car during that same Chicago operation October, shouting La Migra, a common Spanish term for immigration agents that advocates yell out as a warning. DHS agents shot Martinez five times before allegedly driving off, leaving her bleeding in her car. She miraculously survived. Federal prosecutors tried to criminally prosecute Martinez for the incident, but the case against her fell apart and charges were dropped. Altogether, a report by Trace found that immigration officers opened fire in 14 known incidents in the course of their operation since July. And in 2025, we saw the most deaths, murders, 32 in ICE custody since 2004. ICE began in 2003. And these are only reported deaths, just like with regular local cop killings. There is no official database to track the deaths of our people. Joining us to discuss is Joyce Galvez, co-founder and executive director of Humanities United for Restorative Youth Justice, or Courage. Good morning, George.
Hey, good morning, Sister Kat. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for coming on, George. I bring all of these incidents up not to minimize the murder of Ms. Good, but to help us contextualize her murder as something that is happening with increasing regularity. Not an exception to the rule, but as the growing rule. Your immediate response.
Yeah, well, the fact that ICE killed at least 32 people in 2025, but they weren't white folks. And, you know, I think white people woke up yesterday morning kind of shocked at the fact that, you know, someone could be murdered so brutally and broadcasted on TV and then labeled a domestic terrorist. But I think black and brown folks have always known that, you know.
Yeah, I had our sister Melina on just yesterday morning, actually, talking about the murder of Keith Porter in his doorway by an ICE agent who was actually off duty and then decided to suit and boot and go address Brother Keith, who was shooting a gun into the air, which I lived in South Central, something that happened every single year, illegal but not punishable by death. People flooded the streets yesterday, to your point, George, both here and across the country, white folks responding. Because, right, yes, the murder was brutal, and blonde-haired white woman, mother, murdered. The this could happen to me too effect. I've been sitting with, and I think you and I have had some of these conversations, George. We've been flooding the streets since the start of the second term of the Trump regime. We flooded the streets during his first term. They don't care. And I'm not suggesting that people stop taking to the streets. I am suggesting that we are way past due for an additional and new set of organizing strategies. And I'm wondering how you as an organizer are thinking about movement building and resistance in this moment.
Well, I think that we know that there's strength in unity. And folks like me and you and lots of, you know, have been flooding the streets, and we've had the streets filled, man, like thousands of people in certain occasions, right? You know, perhaps even as many as like 10,000 people at any given time. And yet that still isn't enough, you know? And so I'm hoping that this, if has the effect of galvanizing people, that we have a general strike and we shut things down. We have to upset the setup. And I mean, we got to throw a wrench in the machine and we got to stop the machine from operating. So, you know, I want to acknowledge like Renee Nicole Good, because, you know, in the spirit of, you know, many other white allies, she was doing exactly what she should be doing. And we don't want white folks to be dissuaded from continuing to leverage their privilege. You know what I'm saying? That's and put their bodies on the front lines. And so I want to, you know, obviously honor her. You know, she was a, you know, she described herself as a poet, a writer, a wife, yeah, and a mom, right? A guitar strummer, and not so, you know, she had another word to kind of describe it, but this is on live radio. I think it's probably censored, which tells me that she had a sense of humor, you know what I mean? But she left alone and the father of her child, you know, passed away about a year ago is what we found. And so now there's a 6-year-old who's orphaned, right? Now we know that this story all too well, because it's happened because of police terrorism in black and brown communities. You know what I mean? But I, to your point, like, we don't want to minimize her sacrifice either. You know what I mean? Right. And so, you know, if there's an effect, because she was a blonde-haired white woman, because it was televised, of galvanizing, you know, more folks, then, you know, I think that that's what's needed, you know, in terms of a different organizing strategy. It's masses. We need masses. And then, you know, I think the Orwellian effect of this whole thing is really, you know, like anybody who's read 1984, George Orwell, it's like, you know, the state trying to convince us to ignore what our eyes see. You know what I mean? You know, it's like the messaging from Kristi Noem immediately labeling her as a domestic terrorist, you know, and the orange fascists doing the same, and all of the MAGA cult, like, are trying, you know, repeating the same mantra is just like, she should really remind us where we are politically right now. You know what I mean? You know, it's probably worth noting that for all of the right-wing narrative around Minneapolis too being unsafe, there's only been one homicide in the entire city so far this year, and it happened yesterday and was committed by a masked ICE agent. So the whole notion and idea of this being about public safety, like, nobody should be convinced of that, but that's the mantra that they're repeating.
I want to shout out Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey. I don't have time to get into everything he said. If you don't know what he said, go look it up. That's how we need mayors across the country. You know, I shout out Chicago's mayor all the time. George, you said a couple of things that I want to follow up on. I don't have a lot of time with you, but what one of the things you talked about, right? Like, not, we don't want to minimize her sacrifice and I like the word sacrifice. We don't want to minimize her murder.
Yes.
Her murder brought out masses. And one of the things that I was sitting with, you know, our elder, our teacher, Sister Miriam Kaba, teaches us, right, or has taught us, there's no such perfect victims, right? One of the things that they do to us all the time, right, is they say, you know, they murder somebody, and then they say, well, you know, when they were five, they stole a lollipop at a 7-Eleven and ran as if that had anything to do with the murder. You brought that up at the Oscar vigil on January 1st. They may have found that perfect victim for the masses in Renee Good. They may actually have messed up and done exactly that. I mean, her glove box was filled with stuffies for her baby,
for a 6-year-old. Yeah, you know, And, you know, what we also know is that this fascist regime, you know, has been criminalizing Black, Indigenous, immigrants, workers, but our LGBT relatives. And what we also know, that's been learned is that Renee Good was a queer mom. You know what I mean? And so I think that's also important to kind of lift up, you know. And immediately afterwards, ICE went to a high school and started tackling people. They went to Roosevelt High School in Minneapolis. The armed U.S. Border Patrol goons, and they came onto school property during dismissal, and then they began tackling people. They handcuffed two staff members, a teacher. They released chemical weapons on bystanders. Like, this is all in all state-sponsored domestic terrorism.
I was with my comrade warrior sister, Mizan Abakalan, yesterday, and we were discussing this, and she gave a scientific term to something I've simply been describing as what I thought the phenomena occurring was. And the name that she gave for what I've been talking about is emotional contagion. The definition for that is a phenomenon involving the automatic adoption of another person's emotional state, which occurs without the need for awareness of the origin of their emotional experience. The thinking, the conversation being that white vigilantes, ICE agent cops, anyone who feels or is actually being empowered by what I saw someone on Instagram describe as a rich white man's wet dream, is adopting Trump's emotional, mental state, and literal society is being infected with his hate, violent tendencies, and not, and he's right representative of white supremacy, period. But it's
Yes.
personified through this dude. And not that ICE agents were ever the business, but I've spent the last year talking about and wondering what you think about the fact that we can expect violence against our bodies to grow and go exponentially under his rule and as a result of his rhetoric. We saw it in 2015 and 2016 with his first presidential campaign and the uptick in hate crimes, which has yet to go back down or level set to where it was beforehand. Your thoughts on the Orange Juice impact on the social fabric of this country?
Yeah, I feel like there's still some people in the public who try to just kind of attribute this to like some rogue, just like with law enforcement. Oh, this ICE is not rogue. The police ain't rogue. The military isn't rogue. The cruelty is the entire point. The murders are the point. Creating fear, which is really part of the foundational definition of terrorism, is the point. This is the point. They will justify the killing of immigrants. They will justify the killing of U.S. citizens. They will justify the killing of moms, of children, of fathers. They will justify the killing of you, of me. You know what I mean? So I think folks need to kind of get past this sort of excusing, or this is just, you know, these are isolated incidents. As I said before, like, white folks woke up to the shock that a person could be unalive, murdered on television, and then labeled a domestic terrorist. But this is something Black and brown folks have been experiencing forever. You know what I'm saying? We've known this, you know. As we're learning too about Renee, it's hard not to be moved. It's hard not to be touched. You know, her mother described her as one of the kindest people that she's ever known. One of her teachers came out and, you know, had described holding her baby and how kind and talented she was. You know, that she was a working class mom who put herself through school despite circumstances that would have crumbled the pathetic rich boy politicians who are sadistically abetting her murder right now. You know, so I think, you know, to your point also earlier about there being a perfect victim, you know, I think that they may very well have, you know, found that, you know, that this may very well be the situation or the case. The other thing I want to do, man, is just I think it's important to just quote Bob Marley at this time. Bob said, "You will never find justice in a world where criminals make the rules." And that's what we're dealing with right now in this moment.
I mean, I'll just, to the point about the emotion, I went back, I vacillated after an all-day strategy meeting. Was I going to go to the streets or was I going to go to the gym? I chose the gym. But I was in tears the entire time. I just, right, and it's okay, y'all. Like, sometimes we have to cry so that we can suit up and boot up the next day. Sometimes we gotta let it
That's
out.
right.
And remember ourselves that what they cannot steal is our humanity. George, last questions before I let you go. Given all of what we talked about, given this political context, how are you looking to protect the people, the community? What are you putting in place to help keep us safe as we resist?
That's an excellent question. I think the scale of what we're dealing with is what's unprecedented, where the phenomenon and this sort of terrorism that we described not being new. But, you know, ICE has a bigger budget than most militaries around the world. And it's increased its spending on weapons by 700% since Trump took office, right? And what he's done is he's built his own personal military to just terrorize American cities, trample on civil rights, and intimidate his opponents. And so, you know, it's how we are protecting our people and how we're keeping them safe, you know, and our organizing strategies are going to have to adapt and change. And I'm still kind of figuring that out. You know what I mean? We don't want more martyrs. You know what I mean?
Right.
And the truth of the matter, what I've learned from a lot of my OGs, my elders, you know, who came from American Indian Movement, who came from the Black Panther Party, who were political prisoners, is that in many ways, you know, one of my folks had described being a political prisoner as a distraction to the movement, because then people started rallying about their freedom to bring them home, as we absolutely had an incumbent responsibility to do. But it distracted us then from the reason why they were arrested and why what they were fighting for in the first place.
Oof.
And the freedom struggle.
Powerful words to end on, brother. I'm going to let you get on with your busy day. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Always. Much love.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.